Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Trajan, Rome's Last Conqueror, by Nicholas Jackson, narrated by James Cameron Stewart. Preface. Many books have recounted the lives of illustrious and infamous Roman emperors such as Augustus, Caligula, Nero, and Constantine. Yet very few have told the story of one of Rome's supreme conquerors, an emperor who extended the empire to its greatest expanse, a subjugator who crushed the Dacian kingdom, annexed parts of Arabia, and for a short period conquered great swaths of the powerful Parthian domains. The first emperor to be born outside of Italy, he rose from junior officer to emperor in just over 20 years. He was a shrewd politician who maintained his absolute power and authority while promoting a relative sense of liberty in the Senate after years of unbridled autocracy from his predecessors. A prolific builder across the empire, he also constructed in Italy the largest forum ever seen. A visionary who wanted to extend the eastern boundaries of the empire and emulate the achievements of Alexander the Great, he likewise left an empire without a clearly identified heir. I write of the Emperor Trajan, whose reign defined a lasting age of prosperity and the last expansion of Roman imperial might. With such deeds to his name, Trajan was fated both during and after his reign, earning from the Senate the unique honorific of Optimus Princeps, Best of Princes, which he adopted proudly into his titles. Though the luster of his achievements lasted through the ages, this has not favored historians with an abundance of detailed contemporary accounts of his incredible life. Indeed, any writer of ancient Roman history suffers from the frequent absence of hard facts, and as a consequence is forced frequently to use passive language like could, may, probably, or likely. Writing about Trajan is no different, and is more challenging than dealing with the many Roman emperors, certainly those of notoriety, who were covered more frequently in contemporary or near-contemporary literature. Effectively, there are only two contemporary authors who provide details on Trajan. The first was a senator during Trajan's reign called Caius Plinius Caecilius Secundus, better known as Pliny the Younger. A famous speech and a series of letters by Pliny have survived, and they provide a narrow but direct observation into Trajan's life. The second is another senator, Lucius Flavius Arrianus, known as Arrian, who was consul before AD 130 and was possibly serving in Trajan's Parthian War while he wrote an account of that conflict. Unfortunately, only fragments of his history have survived. Otherwise, details come only much later after Trajan's death. Lucius Cassius Dio Coccianus, more popularly known as Dio Cassius, wrote an account around 100 years after Trajan's reign. A surviving digest of the volume that covered Trajan provides some useful details and insights. That is effectively all that we have, except for an array of epigraphic, archaeological, and numismatic evidence, and a handful of much later 3rd century written summaries, presumably compiled from earlier Roman accounts. Trajan himself is thought to have written an account of his wars against Dacia, which is sadly lost today, except for a single citation that is nothing more than a fragment of the original sentence. Therefore, to write about Trajan requires a detective-like approach to piece together the details of his life and reign. Devoid of many details, I have adopted the following approach in reporting historical aspects. Where fact is proven, fact is stated. Where only marginal evidence exists, a position is taken based on the weight of evidence. Where there is no constructive theory or evidence, reasonable conjecture is posed. As such, this account should not be considered an academic attempt to record what is incontrovertibly known about Trajan, but rather it is intended to provide an accessible portrayal of his life and afford a flavour of the daily workings and machinations of the Roman Empire at the end of the first and start of the second centuries. However, this account is by no means exhaustive, and it is beyond the scope of this book to address the complex social, cultural, and political details of the period. In my research, I am principally indebted to three modern studies: the academic biography of Trajan, written by Julian Bennett, Trajan Optimus Princeps, which has provided an authoritative account of his life and skillfully fills many gaps in our knowledge; Frank Lepper's and Shepard Freer's Trajan's Column, a new edition of the Sicorius Plates, which provided a groundbreaking account of Trajan's Dacian War; and Frank Lepper's Trajan's Parthian War, the seminal modern study reviewing the complex conflict. Following convention, Roman costs are generally cited in this book in sestertii. Roman coinage was denominated as follows: 1 aureus, gold, equals 25 denarii, silver, equals 100 sestertii, brass, equals 200 dupondii, brass, equals 400 asses, bronze. To put the values of these into perspective, 1 loaf of bread was around 2 asses, 1 litre of average wine, 5 asses, a donkey, around 500 sestertii, an average slave, 2,000 sestertii, and a fine townhouse in Rome, around 2 million sestertii. A Roman legionary soldier could earn 1,200 sestertii a year in our period. At state level, the largest annual cost was maintaining Rome's enormous professional army, which consumed nearly 80% of the imperial budget, around 643 million sestertii a year. When possible, I tried to leave the confines of my desk to follow in Trajan's footsteps across Europe or see artifacts related to his life. Spain, to understand Trajan's family roots and to get a sense of where he was born and where he spent a significant part of his life growing up. Germany, to appreciate his presence in this region at a turning point in his career. Rome and Italy, on several occasions, to view, among other things, his building works. New York, to examine the unique bust collection of Trajan's immediate family at the Metropolitan Museum. Romania, to trace the events of the Dacian Wars, even camping in remote areas of the Carpathian Mountains to absorb the topography and terrain. Alas, the situation in Iraq and Syria at the time of writing precluded me from following Trajan's steps in the Parthian War. Nicholas Jackson. Chapter 1. Impressionable Years. Born into the Roman World. The first century Roman world can be a hard place to imagine in our current age, racing through a digital era with few places escaping globalization. It is equally difficult to envisage that, in the first century, the power of Rome, Imperium Romanum, had created a city-state which dominated an estimated 60 million people. This was around a quarter of the world's population. At the time, Rome was one of the most civilized and advanced societies on Earth, contemporaneous with the Han Dynasty in China, the Kushan Empire in Central Asia, the Parthian Empire in Persia, and the Mayan civilization in Central America. Where did it all start for Trajan? It began in a wealthy Spanish region of the Roman Empire, surrounded by lush agricultural lands. This would make Trajan the first Roman emperor to be born outside Italy. Sadly, we know very few reliable details about his early childhood, so the story of Trajan's youth and his early path in life will be brief, requiring some postulation based on the life of a typical contemporary Roman family with a comparable social background. Yet, despite very few facts about his early years, we know that Trajan's path in life was one of power. Power that launched his father's career, power within his family to leave Spain for Rome, power to become a senator and later a general, ultimately power to become emperor, a supremacy that would bring Trajan to the mountainous forests of Romania and to the rocky deserts of Iraq in conquest. Back in Spain, even the year of Trajan's birth is uncertain. Deduction allows one to estimate he was born in AD 56, in the notorious reign of the Emperor Nero, and shortly after the 800th anniversary of Rome's celebrated founding. We know his birthday was on the 18th of September. He was born in the town of Italica, in the prospering Roman province of Baetica, which is now the Andalusia region of Spain. As a customary sign of recognition after birth, the midwife would probably have laid the newborn Trajan at his father's feet, and his father, in turn, would have raised him above his head in acknowledgement of his kin and to establish his rights over the boy. On the ninth day after Trajan's birth, a purification festival, Dies Lustricus, would be held by the family for the official naming of the newborn. Trajan is the modern English spelling of his name. His full Latin name was Marcus Ulpius Traianus. A Roman citizen normally had three names. The first name, praenomen, was personal to the individual, like a modern first name. The second name, nomen, referred to the gens or clan. The third name, cognomen, was the family name. Therefore, Trajan's father, also called Marcus Ulpius Traianus, belonged to the Traianus family branch of the Ulpian clan. Occasionally, a fourth name was added, an agnomen, to record an act of honour or define a branch of the family. Women were generally referred to only by the name of their clan, and sometimes the name of a wife or daughter was followed by that of the father or husband in the feminine form. Later in life, Trajan was described as strong in body, suggesting he started life in good health and development. This was an achievement for Trajan and his mother because infant and maternal mortality rates were very high. Around 5% of all Roman newborns did not survive beyond their first month, and an estimated 1 in 4,000 women died giving birth. Even after surviving birth and the precarious first month, around a third of infants died before their first birthday. Trajan's family belonged to the equestrian class, and family life for the young Trajan would have reflected the comfortable and safe surroundings typical of this status. This equestrian class first formed within the Roman army. The men were rich enough to provide horses and serve in the cavalry, and evolved into a wealthy class of land and business owners. To qualify as an equestrian, a Roman citizen needed property to the value of over 400,000 sestertii and could expect certain positions of authority in Roman society. Trajan's father, Marcus Ulpius Traianus, hereafter Traianus, could trace his roots to the ancestral home of the Ulpian clan in the town of Tudere, Todi, in Umbria, Italy. Tudere was well positioned near the river Tiber and the Via Amarina road, both connecting the town to Rome. Following the annexation of Spain into the Roman Empire, a family branch of the Ulpii probably left for the province of Baetica and settled in the town of Italica, northwest of Seville, lured by the promise of wealth from the prosperous agricultural region or for an administrative position in the province. Alternatively, a distant family member may have been one of the first Roman army veterans who set up home in the newly founded town of Italica. The Ulpii, like the Aelii and the Traii or Traii, were noble families in the region. Intermarriage between the Ulpii and the Traii resulted in a branch of Traianus's ancestors. Traianus was born around AD 25 and probably married Trajan's mother, Marcia, at around 25 years of age. Marcia's roots are even more obscure. Her ancestors may have come from the Marcii Barii family that could have originated from wealthy landowners around Emeria, Amelia, also in Umbria, near the Via Amarina. Some have pointed out that this possibly made Marcia's father, Trajan's grandfather, the prominent Quintus Marius Barea Serranus, who was consul in AD 52. If this was the case, the match with Marcia was a prestigious one for Traianus. Moreover, Marcia's half-sister, Marcia Farinilla, would later marry the Emperor Titus and therefore tie Traianus to the imperial court, a linkage that would help exalt his family into the highest echelons of Roman society and power. After the marriage of Traianus and Marcia, Trajan's elder sister, Ulpia Marciana, was born. Trajan and his sister appear to have remained close throughout their lives. The Romans did not have a definitive word for a newborn child. Instead, during the period before he reached 7 years of age, Trajan would have been referred to as an infans, literally meaning not speaking, and from the time he learned to speak and walk, he would have been a puer, a prepubescent boy. As a symbol of Trajan's vulnerability as an infant, he would have worn a traditional bulla around his neck, a gold charm to ward off evil spirits. This charm was given during the dies lustricus, the naming day ceremony. As a sign of free birth, a puer might sometimes wear a toga praetexta, a toga dyed to create a broad purple band around the rim. Children were viewed as requiring formation into human beings. This formation was prone to corruption through seduction and failure to resist the trappings of pleasure. Traianus and Marcia would have striven to protect the young Trajan from any abuse to ensure his correct formation into an adult. Thus, a pedagogue or slave escort was usually appointed to watch over a young boy like Trajan and to shadow his early years and shield him from dangers during the absence of his parents. Traianus's early career. Before we can explore Trajan's education and his early years in Italica and Rome, we must first consider the early cursus honorum, or senatorial career, of his father, Traianus. Little is known of Traianus's initial career, but the different stages were prescribed by law and status. One can therefore piece together his path approximately based on the elements of a typical career in the Senate. Prerequisites for entry into the Senate included free birth, Roman citizenship, no serious prior convictions, good health, and 1 million sestertii or more in the census rating. Essentially, one had to be wealthy and influential. A further precondition for any hopeful senatorial candidate was selection by the emperor into the vigintferate, the 20 annual public posts in Rome held by men around 20 years old. Next was required a junior military position, tribunus lateclavius, typically for a year, and then a candidate could enter the Senate proper if selected for one of the 20 quaestorships, these being public financial posts. After a mandatory 5-year gap, the next senatorial office was the praetorship. 18 praetorships, judicial in function, were hotly contended. Like the quaestorships, these positions effectively required endorsement by the emperor to ensure selection. There was also a fast-track route for favorites of the emperor who could be adlected directly into the Senate. Protocol allowed Rome's aristocrats to qualify for a consulship at 32 years of age, and this was the pinnacle of a senatorial career, despite the heavy erosion of the position's power in the imperial era. 2 consuls were appointed at any one time by the emperor, who could choose to hold one of the offices himself. As an ex-consul, a senator could expect the best military and governorship positions, and perhaps the prestigious appointment of a second consulship, or even the extremely rare honor of a third. Working backwards from later dates that we do know, Traianus took a relatively risky step around the age of 18 and broke away from his ancestors to seek a position on the first rung of the ladder towards a senatorial cursus, the vigintferate. In this position, he may have acted as a junior magistrate dealing with civil cases. The post probably meant that Traianus had a helping hand from a senior senator, or perhaps even direct selection by the Emperor Claudius himself, whose attention may have been drawn to his emerging talents. Traianus would have next taken up the sword as a junior officer, a tribunus lateclavius, typically under a legion commander who was a family relative or close family friend. Following this military service, Traianus would be back in Rome for an annual post, circa AD 51-52, as quaestor. Around the age of 31, Traianus then held an annual praetor post in Rome, circa AD 57-58. After Claudius, the reign of Nero saw steady promotions for novi homines, new men from the provinces, instead of the traditional aristocratic families in Rome. The novi homines, like Traianus, prospered in the new era, and such patronage secured him a governorship of the senatorial province of Baetica, his homeland. The date of this governorship is not known precisely. It has been argued that he was possibly the first provincial Roman citizen to govern his home province, and this was a change supported by Nero, who appreciated that a local man knew the best way to govern his own backyard. Despite this trend under Nero, this was rare because there were repeated rulings against governing one's own province of origin. In and around Italica. Traianus's senatorial career involved a great deal of travelling across the Roman Empire, and senators were expected to live in Rome when not away on state business, meaning that he would have spent limited periods in his Italica home. As a result, bailiffs were likely appointed by Traianus to manage the family properties in Baetica in his absence. Nevertheless, around the middle of the first century, there was the opportunity for Traianus and his family to return to Italica, perhaps to attend to critical business and interests in Baetica. Consequently, the family was probably together in Italica for the period up to and around Trajan's birth in 56. Before or after Trajan's birth, it is more than likely that Traianus returned to Rome and left his family in Italica, rather than drag them away on a long journey while his wife was pregnant or while Trajan was very young. Accordingly, Trajan likely spent his first months or years in Italica before moving to Rome, and then, perhaps at around 8 or 9 years old, he almost certainly would have returned to Italica with his father during Traianus's governorship of Baetica, circa 64-65. The town of Italica was established in 206 BC by one of the greatest Roman generals of the age, Publius Cornelius Scipio. It was founded for his wounded troops and veterans following the victorious Battle of Alipa, where the Carthaginians were decisively beaten by an outnumbered Roman force. This battle marked the climax of the Second Punic War and effectively removed the Carthaginians from Spain, giving Rome a very large regional acquisition for its newly forming empire. The name Italica was chosen nostalgically in recognition of the troops' Italian homeland. It was the very first Roman settlement outside Italy, and Scipio selected the area as a bastion of the Roman presence for two reasons. Firstly, its geographical position lent itself well to transportation and communication within the region. Secondly, it was an area blessed with substantial natural resources. The new town of Italica shared its plateau site with the native Turdetanians, who already inhabited this fertile region. The Turdetanians were peaceful in nature, and the Roman settlers integrated well, bringing Roman culture and technologies that would have been slowly accepted by the natives. To the north of Italica was access to the western Sierra Morena mountains, rich in metal ores. To the east, plains stretched for miles, and to the west, gentle rolling hills with rich soils. In the vicinity, the Huelva River flowed into the wide Guadalquivir River, then called the Baitis, which continued south to the sea. The riverbanks were cultivated, and the river navigable from the coast to the town of Cordova, which later became the capital of the province. By the 1st century AD, Italica had flourished into a successful Roman town with municipal status, while intensive Roman farming methods yielded a bounty of local produce. A complex irrigation network was developed, bringing the river waters further inland and allowing wine, oil, and wheat production to rise substantially. Livestock was so abundant that meat was a regular part of the staple diet in the province. The Bitis River not only blessed the land with its life-giving waters, but it was also a highway for the export of produce down to the sea and then on to Rome by ship along the coast. In particular, olive oil was liquid gold for the Italica residents and others in the region. In Roman times, olive oil was used for cooking, preserving foods, cleansing the skin after bathing, fuel for lanterns, and even found other uses such as a dubious contraceptive agent. The trade in olive oil therefore brought enormous wealth to those involved and aided the prosperity of Italica. Still clearly visible today in the southwest of Rome, behind the ancient Tiber River wharves, there is an enormous mountain of ancient pottery rubbish over 50 meters high and a kilometer in circumference. The vast waste heap, called Monte Testaccio, is largely made up of broken large amphorae used to import olive oil from Baetica. The amphorae could not be economically recycled and were spoiled by the absorption of oil into the clay structure. Instead, they were carefully destroyed, stacked, and treated with lime to stop the rancid smell of rotting olive oil. It is estimated that over 50 million amphorae were discarded, whose total capacity exceeded 6 billion litres of oil, a testament to the enormous olive oil trade and export wealth of the Baetica region. The Italica that Trajan would have known was not especially distinct from the other major settlements in Baetica, but it was able to boast a large and richly decorated theatre constructed in honour of the Emperor Augustus in the early part of the 1st century. Parts of the theatre were financed privately by Lucius Blatius Traianus Pollio and Gaius Traius Pollio, who were previously town magistrates and priests of the cult of the deified Augustus. Traianus Pollio may have been Trajan's grandfather. If that was the case, a man able to help privately fund the construction of a theatre was also able to ensure that Traianus had the substantial sum to qualify for entry to the Senate. A mosaic in Italica still exists today that identifies a Marcus Traius in charge of constructing a temple of Apollo. This same Traius could have been Trajan's great-grandfather. The nearby Via Augusta, the longest Roman road in the Iberian Peninsula, which linked the Pyrenees all the way to the southern coastal town of Cadiz, brought important communication and trade links to Italica, but it was not these links, nor its unique theatre, its auspicious historical founding, nor its strategic position in the province that made the town special to the Traianus family. Rather, it was the very soil of the land and mineral reserves, blessed by the waters of the Bitis and the warm Mediterranean climate, that combined together to make Italica distinctive for the family and provided the ideal conditions for both agriculture and mining to generate vast wealth. This wealth was sufficient to fund an exit from provincial life, qualify for entry into the upper tiers of Roman society, and gain access to the power corridors of empire. Traianus, and subsequently Trajan, indeed owed their positions largely to the fertile lands around Italica. Large quantities of grain and wine, and also olive oil, not only in large quantities, but also of the best quality. And further, wax, honey, and pitch are exported from there, and not unimportant either is the fish salting industry that is carried on. Strabo. Produce from agriculture was not the only blessing in Baetica. In addition, it had abundant mineral resources, highly desirable to Rome. Up to the present moment, in fact, neither gold, nor silver, nor yet copper, nor iron has been found anywhere.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?